Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. Along with me is Dustin Schutte. How are we doing this week, Dustin?
I'm doing great. We're one step closer, 1 week closer to media days. So we're getting closer to the actual football things.
We are. In fact, last week, the ACC kicked things off, Dustin. And here at Penn State, a couple of our old friends decided to speak up. I don't know. Did you see the quotes from Pat Narduzzi and James Franklin?
I saw Pat Narduzzi saying the ACC is better than the Big Ten. I did not see any from James Franklin, though.
We'll let that one go. He just, James Franklin went down the path of, we won the offseason.
Okay. Oh, sure. Okay.
Now, you'd think they taught them in coaching school, you know, coaching 101. You don't brag about how well you did in the offseason. You could say, hey, I thought we did well. You don't say we won the offseason.
Right. Yep.
I do appreciate Pat Narduzzi letting us know that the ACC is better than the Big Ten. I was totally unaware of that.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. Miami losing to Indiana in the championship game indicates that that may not be the actual case. And I know he went into like some, I don't know if he went into the specifics, but he said that they have a winning record. I don't know if any of that's true. I don't even think he knows if that's true, but
I don't think he cares if it's true.
That's also true. Yes.
Well, I think it's, I think he can't be that stupid. Can he?
He can. He's done this before. This is not new for Pat Narduzzi. So, I mean, we've seen him go on, you know, run at the mouth about Penn State not wanting to play Pitt regularly and this, that, and the other thing. So he's not this isn't new for him, but I you know what? It kind of fits Pittsburgh, if I'm being honest, like that that type of mentality. So, hey, he's been there a long time, and apparently they don't care what he has to say. So.
Well, I think, too, that with Penn State, and this has been a topic of discussion at Penn State and at Pitt for many years, about it's obviously was a long-time rivalry, and Penn State has nothing to gain by playing Pitt. Pitt has everything to gain and nothing to lose. And it's not just a matter of on the field, you know, for Pat Narduzzi. It's also a... Pitt can't fill up their stadium. They can't even – well, they use the Steelers stadium. They can't come close to filling the thing. But if they play Penn State, they do. They fill up the place. So it's a financial issue, but it's also a case financially where what they started doing is you couldn't buy single-game tickets to Pitt-Penn State. You had to buy like a 3 or 4 game package. Yeah. So all these Penn State fans were stuck buying 3 or 4 game packages because that's Pitt exploiting that ability. Anyway, that all is a discussion for another day. I actually wanted to talk to you today, Dustin, about coaching and coaches. And we'll start with the Big Ten, maybe move on from there. But first of all, the evaluation of coaches, it's not simply how many games they win. There's so much more that goes into it, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, you have to evaluate what the school is, what the school's expectations are, how is recruiting going, how much is this coach getting paid. There's just a lot of different factors. What's the development process like? How many guys are you putting into the NFL? Obviously, winning and losing is a big part of all of that. But there are a lot of different factors that go into, you know, whether or not you're an elite level coach, a good coach, or maybe you've fallen on some rough times.
Well, I always use as the example, and I forget who the quote was from about Ryan Day, that he was born on third base and thought he hit a triple by taking over the Ohio State job. But there, and this is where I've been a guy that pushed really hard for the idea that, hey, if you're at Ohio State, you or I could coach them and they would win 9 or 10 games. The fact is, though, Ryan Day isn't winning 9 or 10 games. He's winning 11 or 12 games every year. So right. He is doing something right. But I always wondered, to me, the great experiment would be Greg Schiano was, I guess, the defensive coordinator when Ryan Day was the offensive coordinator at Ohio State. Ryan Day ends up as head coach of Ohio State. Greg Schiano ends up as head coach of Rutgers. What would happen if they switched jobs?
Yeah, I think it would be a disaster for both, if I'm being honest. less likely to be a disaster for Ryan Day, because Rutgers just doesn't have any expectations, really. So could you get that team to 6 or 7 wins? And the answer is you don't know, because Ryan Day's never had to really coach 3-star type of players. Greg Schiano, I feel confident, could probably win 8 or 9 games every year at Ohio State, but certainly that's going to get you fired. So, you know, I think it would not bode well for either, but I think Ryan Day would probably have more chance of success just because the bar at Rutgers is so low. But I think that's an example of guys being perfect fits at their respective schools. I always thought Pat Fitzgerald was a good example of that too. And my there used to be a lot of coach rankings that would come out. I've said this probably a million times on this, so my apologies to sound like a broken record. But I always said that I don't think Pat Fitzgerald could do what Nick Saban did at Alabama. But I don't know that Nick Saban could have done what Pat Fitzgerald did at Northwestern. So knowing your program, understanding fit, understanding your personnel is all very, very important. So that also kind of factors into the equation here.
Well, you bring up a great point in bringing up Nick Saban. I use often as an example, you ask, what would Nick Saban do at Northwestern? We will never know. But if you asked, what would Nick Saban do at Michigan State?
Right.
We do know. And guess what? He was essentially a 500 coach at Michigan State. So, yeah. You know, the program has a lot to do with that. And, you do have to allow for the fact that, you know, Nick Saban could have learned, matured, and became a better coach by the time he hit Alabama. But it always makes me wonder just how good these coaches are and how much difference it makes in a program. And at this is the point in our show where either you or I will bring up Kurt Cignetti at Indiana. And what I wonder is he an example of how valuable the coach is, how big a factor, or is he the exception to the rule?
I mean, I think we live in this, I would say he's probably the exception, because I just don't think there are that many elite coaches that can just go anywhere and win. I mean, I do think to an extent Nick Saban fits that, because he did win at LSU. I mean, he did only have really one good season at Michigan State. So, but I think that getting older and maturing probably helped in that regard. But Cignetti's won everywhere he's been, and it hasn't mattered what level or what the program is. So I think he's kind of the enigma where coaching makes a huge – like again, I don't think Ryan Day could do that.
No, I mean, I don't think there's another coach in the country who could do what he did at Indiana.
Yeah.
And I'll even say this, going forward now the next 2 years, I don't know if Kurt Cignetti could do again what he did the last 2 years in Indiana.
Yeah, I think that's fair, because you don't know, you're not going to have the same type of experience that you had. You're not going to have that same sort of chemistry, because a lot of those James Madison guys are gone. They lost a lot of their senior players. They're going to have to usher in a new court. Like this is going to be a very intriguing season for Indiana. This is probably also the toughest regular season schedule they've played since he's been there. So, I mean, that's not to take, you go 16-0 and you beat the doors off of Alabama. You beat Oregon twice. You beat Miami. So it's not like they lucked their way into a national championship. But when you are turning over a lot of that talent and you have a tough schedule ahead of you, I think I don't want to say we're going to see what type of coach Kurt Cignetti is, but is he like basically is he invincible or is he human? We'll find out this year.
Well, I think the mistake that we as fans, we in the media, and everybody puts out there is they want to lock in a judgment on a coach. Bill Belichick is the greatest coach of NFL coach of all time. Mm-hmm. He is. Well, he is until he loses Tom Brady.
Right.
So, you know, time is a factor in all this. The college version of that theory, I think, is Dabo Sweeney. I think what he did at Clemson, winning a couple national championships after taking over a program that was not an Alabama, not a Georgia, not a Michigan, not an Ohio State, not one of those top-tier schools. And he took it from that point, made it an absolute top-tier team, a make the playoffs every year, win multiple national championships, and oh, now, by the way, they're nowhere near the same program. Did Dabo Sweeney become dumb in the last couple years?
No, but a couple things here. One is that he really kind of refuses to go into the transfer portal, and so that's a big factor. You have to be willing to do that. Like, unless you're retaining 100% of your roster, you have to go into the portal and address the issues that – where you need to improve. What doesn't matter where it is, but if you find that there's a guy out there that you think can help your roster, doesn't matter how opposed you are to the rules of the transfer portal, you got to be able to go in there and do it. The other thing is that he's also lost some really good coordinators. I mean, Tony Elliott moved on to Virginia. Brent Venables went to Oklahoma. I can't remember where Rhett Lashley was, if he was at Miami or if he was at Clemson for a time being. But point stands is that they lost a couple of really good coordinators there, and that has an effect too. Now, you saw at places like Alabama, you can just constantly turn over and continue to win under Nick Saban, but you have to be able to identify really good offensive and defensive coordinators, and I think that's been the struggle since those two guys in particular have left the program and why they're not maybe quite the championship-caliber team that they were couple years ago.
All right, Justin, that's going to be it for quarter number one. When we come back, we're going to start talking about specific coaches in the Big Ten, and we're going to get your take on them. We're going to do that right after this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first-of-its-kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number two. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. We're talking college football, and we're talking about college football coaching. And we finished up quarter number one, Dustin, talking about Dabo Sweeney at Clemson. And you talked about his inability to adapt to this new world, which includes NIL, the transfer portal. So the job changes. And I think that's my point. Time and circumstances change. It's a different game. I give Nick Saban a lot of credit for winning at Alabama over, what, a decade, decade and a half?
Yeah, yeah.
But I do think he got out at the right time, and I do think it was a conscious decision that, you know what, this isn't the same game anymore. And with the portal, with NIL, I don't think it was that he said, oh, Alabama can't compete in that world. It's that they will have to compete in that world, where previously they walk in the door, they say, we're Alabama. Kids, you're drawn to Alabama because, hey, they're the best team in the country, best chance of getting to the NFL, best facilities. Everything about it, Alabama had the advantage to bring in the best players. Now, with NIL, not so much.
Yeah, I mean, the SEC used to dominate the recruiting front, right? And so, and maybe they still do. I don't know. I don't dig into recruiting rankings that much anymore. But, you know, ever since they've allowed NIL to be a legal thing in the NCAA, the Big Ten has pretty much dominated college football. They've won three different programs, have won a national championship. And you're talking about also the losingest program in the history of college football losing. And we can praise Kurt Cignetti all we want, but if they didn't have money accessible, they weren't going to get players to come to IU. So I think that there was a recognition of like, this is, it's not to say that they weren't working hard at Alabama. Like, you obviously have to have a lot of major work ethic to win at that level that he did at Alabama. But I don't think there was any doubt it was going to get a lot harder because of the Big Ten and their alumni bases and the reach that they have. The SEC wasn't the only one now with throwing dollar bills around. And I think we've kind of hinted at that before. Like, they were paying, you know, playing under the table, sometimes in McDonald's bags like Tennessee. You know, there are a lot of different accusations out there, but I think that it's just been very interesting that since money has been, you know, NIL has been legal, that the Big Ten has kind of dominated this. And I think Nick Saban knows there's some his job was going to get a lot more difficult.
Well, and I think that NIL and the portal also became equalizers in that, I remember how a few years ago everyone feared there'd be even less parity in the game. The haves would be even more so, and the have-nots. What wasn't taken into account was money could become an equalizer. Hey, you know, if there's no money involved, a kid would go to Alabama, Georgia, or Ohio State no matter what. Now, well, you know what? Ohio State and Alabama and Georgia can't financially dominate. They can get all the best players, but they can't also get the second and third best players,
right?
Because they'll take the money to go to another school. So I think that variable changes the evaluation of coaches a little bit more. You know, when you talk Indiana, you always bring up the fact that they are now spending money as part of the, because you just refuse to give them that much credit, don't you? But anyway, there's more to it. And that's why SMU, Texas Tech, and Miami are now part of these discussions. So let me use that to segue to, if you're going to talk, or we're going to talk about the coaches in the Big Ten, let's start at the top. Give me the four or five guys, coaches, that are the top tier coaches. You don't need to think hard. Just throw the names out there. Ryan Day is one of the names. We know that. Yeah. Who are the other names that belong in that top tier?
In the Big Ten?
Yes.
So Ryan Day, Kurt Cignetti, Dan Lanning. That might be it. I'm trying to go through my head.
Yeah, that might be it.
I think that's it, yeah.
Okay, so now I think we need to look at those programs, and interestingly enough, each one of those three programs are a bit different, but how do you evaluate those three coaches that are in the top tier? And like I said, they're all, you know, Ohio State, traditionally, Oregon, bit of tradition, but also a lot shorter than Ohio State's resume, and then the newcomer, Indiana. How does that affect how you judge these three coaches?
Well, I think Indiana's a no-brainer. I mean, you took one of the worst programs in college football history and turned them into a national power. So to me, that puts Kurt Cignetti up there. And the fact that he came, it wasn't like this was a one-year wonder. This was like, he was successful at James Madison. He was successful at Elon. And then to translate that success at Indiana. Then you look at Ryan Day and the fact that he's won a national championship, been to the college football playoff multiple times, won a couple Big Ten championships. I know he had those losses to Michigan, but this is a guy that's still winning 11, like you said, 11 or 12 games per year. And then Dan Lanning is the, like, almost like, I don't know what the comparison is here, but he's been fantastic in the regular season. The playoff is where he's really kind of struggled in recent seasons, right? So,
let me stop you there for a second and talking about Dan Lanning that way. And I've used the expression a lot of times about guys like Dan Lanning. He can't win the big one until he does.
Yeah.
And you could have, 2 years ago, you could have had the very same comment about Ryan Day. Does real well until it comes time to win a championship game.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And so I think Dan Lanning has always has his team in position, at least. Like, they won the Big Ten 2 years ago and I think they were the number one overall seed before they got boat raced by Ohio State. This year they had a run to, I think it was the Final Four, and then got beat by Indiana. It was either the quarterfinals or semifinals. I don't remember. This is how much I pay attention, Jim. But anyway, so he's had some really good teams. They just haven't been able to capitalize on that success in the postseason yet. But he's still a relatively young coach, and the fact that he's been so successful so early in his career, I think, puts him in that category.
Is it fair to judge him? And I've heard this talked about him. He's coaching at Oregon, and this is his first collegiate head coaching job. And you could probably put 20, 30, 40 other coaches in that position, they would have won the same way because they're able to use Phil Knight's money.
Well, no, that's a good point. But I think it also, we've talked about that, you have to have the right fit. Willie Taggart was a really good coach where did he come from? Was that USF? And then he went to South Oregon. Florida. And so you've had some Mark Helfrich, however you pronounce his last name. There's a couple Oregon guys that have been in the mix that are good football coaches, but they haven't had the same level of success as Dan Lanning. So, and to do it consistently. I mean, they're consistently getting some of the top quarterbacks. They are consistently a contender in the Big Ten. Obviously, they were in the Pac-12. So, to me, we can say that, but he's just taking advantage of what he's been, what's there and what's legal in college football now. So I still would give him, I'd put him up in that tier. Now, again, would he have the same success if you moved him to UCLA? Probably not. So I don't think he's that, but we can't judge on what we don't know. We can judge on what we do know.
Well, and I think that's where Kurt Cignetti gets the advantage, where Ryan Day, Dan Lanning, maybe not quite to the same level as Ryan Day, but they both walked into winning situations with the money there to do it, the reputation. But Kurt Cignetti walked into a situation that was the complete opposite. And he's made, you talked about, could they win now? And these are your actual words. Well, they don't have those James Madison guys anymore. You know what I mean? Think about that statement and what that means for coaching. And I also think his ability to bring in, he's now on his third year of bringing in a portal quarterback. Okay. Mm-hmm. Was he lucky the first 2 years, or did he just plain know what he was looking for?
I think
more than other guys do.
Yeah, I think he knows what he's looking for. I mean, I think he is able to understand what a guy brings to the table and how that guy's going to fit into his offense and what they like to do. And it doesn't have to be a guy who launches the – I mean, you can have that guy who can launch the ball 60 yards down the field, but it doesn't have to be. If you know the guy's going to fit into your offensive scheme – like, Curtis Rourke is not an NFL-caliber quarterback, really, but he fit what Indiana needed him to do. And there's plenty of examples of those guys. And if you're able to develop them, and they work in your offense, then you're not worried about their NFL potential. You're worried about can they help you win while they're in college.
Well, and Mendoza, as I've often said, he was there for the taking for anybody, when he was at Cal. I didn't see, the Alabamas and Ohio States and Georgias knocking down his door to get him.
Right.
Cincinnati gets him, and all of a sudden he's a Heisman Trophy winner and the number one pick in the NFL. It's going to be fascinating to see how he does in the NFL. And he was a great, great college quarterback. It's going to be interesting to see because in the NFL, because there's been more than a couple people have said, you know what? He's not going to be a good NFL quarterback. Yeah, that it was the system, the program at Indiana, all of those things combined made him what he was. Like I said, it's going to be interesting to see. All right, Dustin, we looked at the top level of the Big Ten of coaches, the top tier. Next, I'm going to go the other way. How about the guys at the, well, even if they're not at the bottom tier, they're the guys that are at risk of losing their jobs. They are on the hot seat. First, we'll ask you who they are. Then we're going to ask you, you know what? Who's got a chance to get off of the hot seat? Dustin, we're going to do that right after this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider. Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. I'm Jim Galante. He's Dustin Schutte. We're talking about the coaches in college football, and it's a fascinating conversation. And because you've got guys at the top who have the great advantage of great programs. You know, would Ryan Day be as good a coach if he had to coach a mediocre team? Let's get to some of those guys, though, in the Big Ten specifically, Dustin. Who are the guys that are on the hot seat? Maybe not just those at the, the very bottom programs, but they're the guys who, you know what? They haven't done such a great job necessarily, and their job may be in peril. Just throw out those couple names, and then we'll evaluate those coaches.
I would say Lincoln Riley at USC is one of those. I would say Mike Locksley at Maryland is one of those. And I would say Luke Fickell at Wisconsin is the third. And I think that's probably it. The other one, Hold on. There's potential for a fourth here, but I got to look and see last year real quick.
Let me throw a name out at you. Do you think Matt Rule from Nebraska belongs on that list?
I'm going to say no. And the reason being is because I think they've gone through coaches so frequently that I think they know that they need to stick with somebody. And now that's if something happens and they go 2-10, there's always that caveat, but I don't think that's going to happen. They get to 7 or 8 wins again. I think they're going to be just fine. And his job is safe. Now, if they don't make a big jump from last year, does that put them on the hot seat for next year? That maybe is a more interesting question, but I think right now just getting back-to-back bowl games, I think is impressive. It is what, maybe not impressive, but what they're trying to, there's a foundation there. I'll put it that way.
Well, I know you were going to look something up. While you do, I'm going to throw some numbers at you. Okay. For those who don't know, when I come up with a topic like this, I don't tell Dustin ahead of time. That means he doesn't get to do the research and I do. if nothing else, Dustin, it makes me feel good about myself.
Sure.
It makes me able to see what I know. And here's an interesting thing. I brought up Matt Rhule specifically. You fell into my trap by bringing up Luke Fickell. Yes.
Yep.
Here's something interesting. Third-year coaches or three-year coaches so far in the Big Ten, Matt Rhule, David Braun from Northwestern, and Luke Fickell. They all have 3 years under their belt, okay? Forget the out-of-conference games. They don't count for squat. You know, it's such a variable. Just look at their records in the Big Ten. Matt Rhule, Nebraska. Luke Fickell, Wisconsin. David Braun, Northwestern. Rank their Big Ten records, the three of them, first, second, and third.
Off the top of your head. Yeah, I'm going to guess that number one is David Braun, number two is Fickell, number three is Rhule.
Interesting. You knew, by the way, I asked the question that I was suckering you into this. And you are right. David Braun at Northwestern has a better Big Ten record than Luke Fickell or Matt Rhule do at Nebraska or Wisconsin. That, Dustin Schutte, is the headline in my mind. How the heck could you take Northwestern and over the 3 years with the new coach, just like those other programs, have a better record than Nebraska and Wisconsin? How is that possible? If I were a Wisconsin fan or a Nebraska fan, I would be driving the coach to the airport myself to get him out of town. So, by the way, just for full disclosure, the records, David Braun is 11-16 in the Big Ten. So he's won 11 games over the last 3 years in conference. How many games do you think Luke Fickell and Matt Rhule have won in conference?
Is my one question is it the same number?
It is.
Okay, so I want to say 9.
You were close. It's 10. Okay. So, they're close to winning as many games as Northwestern. Yeah, come on. That's why I hear what you're saying about Matt Rhule, and you have to look at the individual circumstances. And they were somewhat improved in their record. I think last year was Matt Rhule's best record at Nebraska. But come on, this is Nebraska. And, you know, you had last year this great you battled for the recruit, Dylan Raiola, to be your quarterback. And he's not there anymore. That's who you were building around. So just what is it that Matt Rhule has done for that program? We've talked about this for multiple years. I think between Wisconsin and Nebraska, you had at least similar levels of expectation. And in my mind, they've both disappointed. Yes, Nebraska could be looking for some stability, but boy, have they both been a disappointment.
Well, I would agree. I would say the difference here for me is that Nebraska needed somebody to take them out of the three-win era. Like, they were consistently getting three wins, so they weren't even bowl eligible. Whereas with Wisconsin, the firing of Paul Chryst is maybe the dumbest decision in their program's history. So, and the reason it's been disappointing is because the goal was to fire – if you were moving on from Paul Chryst, you wanted the guy who was going to take you to the next level, get you to the college football playoff, win Big Ten championships. They haven't even been close. Like, they're not even on the same. It wasn't like he took over and it's more of the same. He took over and they're worse. They're way worse than they were under Paul Chryst. So that, to me, is why it's a little bit different in that regard. And he's gotten, if I'm not mistaken, Luke Fickell's gotten worse every year. I think he had 7 or 8 wins that first year, went 5-7 and then 4-8, I think. So that, like, you're not, and there's nothing very promising. You've had coaching staff changes. You brought in quarterbacks you thought were going to help you. I'm just so thoroughly unimpressed with Luke Fickell and that whole decision. Like, it's a catastrophe.
Did you by any chance find that other name you were looking for to add someone to this list?
Yeah, but it's not. So I was looking because I knew Rutgers didn't make a bowl game last year. I thought they went two straight years without a bowl game, but that's not true. So I would not put Greg Schiano in that category.
I think that he's in a position though where another year or two, maybe without a good season this year, next year is going to be the hot seat for him.
Sure. That's what I think too.
But I question any of these schools that, you know, think about putting their coach on the hot seat has to look at first at, are we giving our coach the tools to compete financially? At Penn State, for example, you talk basketball. My understanding, I think Penn State's basketball NIL is the lowest in the Big Ten. So if someone's going to be critical of the program, you got to remember that point also. I don't know where Rutgers is as far as, financially, their ability to pay players. But that's got to be part of this discussion. The other name you had in there is Mike Locksley. And my take on it is, how does he keep his job?
I don't know. I don't think he's going to pass this season. You look at Maryland, and there's not a name on that roster that appeals to you. He hasn't done anything pre or post Talia Tungavailoa. They're projected to finish second worst in the Big Ten behind or ahead of only Purdue. And I don't even think they're going to finish ahead of Purdue, if I'm being quite honest. They play head-to-head. I think Purdue's going to win that game. And I'm not just saying that as a homer. But there's nothing that's impressed you about Maryland pre or post Tungavailoa.
I'm with you. And, you know, first of all, I question how he got the job at Maryland. I think it was his sterling record at New Mexico, where he was a 2-26 coach there. Yeah. And, hey, my feeling is over 2.5 years, if you could win two games at New Mexico, you've kind of proven yourself. That headlines your resume. So, yes, it just appears, you know, he has pictures of someone on Maryland's board, I guess. So that is it. Are there any other coaches? Now, the one other one is the interesting name, which is Lincoln Riley, who is the USC coach. And he's had some high expectations from him. The recruiting has been really good, but they're not winning enough games, are they?
Right. No. I mean, this is a program that wants to be in the college football playoff hunt. They want to be in the Big Ten title race every single year. And again, this is a program that hasn't been close. And one of the biggest issues, they've been actually pretty good at home, but they cannot win a game on the road, especially when they travel to the Midwest. And I understand it's difficult. But if you want to be in the playoff and that's why you're getting paid big bucks. You're trying to bring in top end recruits, high end players from the transfer portal, and they just have not delivered. They've had some good offensive teams, but they've got to figure some stuff out because he's like USC will not hesitate to cut ties with anybody. So he better figure that one out quick because it's not like 7-5, 8-4 is not going to cut it at USC.
I think for him, and I don't have the USC schedule in front of me, October 10th in Happy Valley. It'll probably be the whiteout. Yeah. They're travel, as you pointed out, winning on the road. But this is not going to Ohio State and winning. This is not going to Indiana and winning. It's a Penn State team that is not necessarily going to be that top-tier kind of team. That's the kind of game Lincoln Riley has to win, because if not, he's going to again be, 8-4.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how much time we have in this segment.
No, go ahead quick. 30 seconds.
So they've got, after their porous non-con schedule, they go to Rutgers, have Oregon at home, Washington at home, at Penn State, at Wisconsin, home against Ohio State, at Indiana, Maryland, at UCLA. So not exactly an easy road for Lincoln Riley.
But they do have Ohio State and Indiana on their schedule. if you project those as losses, that makes that Penn State game so important. All right, we've got more to come. We'll do that right after this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin, I'm Jim. It's quarter number four of our show. Let's finish strong, Dustin. Here's another. We looked at the top tier. We looked at the bottom tier, guys, if not bottom tier, at least on the hot seat. Here's another group that I want you to tell me about. How about the new coaches in the Big Ten, which are Kyle Whittingham at Michigan, Pat Fitzgerald at Michigan State, Matt Campbell at Penn State, and Bob Chesney at UCLA? All very interesting storylines with all four of those guys, Dustin.
Yeah, I mean, all of them, it's kind of, can you win at this level, right? Like, Matt Campbell was very successful at Iowa State, but you don't face the same pressure at Iowa State that you will at Penn State, and you're not dealing with the same caliber recruits, and you're not having to play Ohio State or Michigan or Indiana when you're at Iowa State. So that's Bob Chesney. Can he have, I don't want to say Kurt Cignetti like success, but he's going from James Madison to UCLA.
He's following the same path.
Yes. And so is it kind of like one of those where, you know, for a long time, guys who coached at Appalachian State would move on and had some good success at their next program. So is this a thing where James Madison has just a sustainable program, or is Bob Chesney a really good football coach? We'll find that out. Pat Fitzgerald was out of coaching for a few years. And let's face it, he had some really strong seasons at Northwestern, but he went out pretty they played pretty poorly his final couple seasons there. So, you know, how has he grown, and what's it like for him that now that he, I don't want to say faced a recruiting. Yeah, I'm going to say it. He faced a recruiting hurdle because at Northwestern, obviously the academics are top tier. So now you go from probably the most prestigious school in the, not probably, it is the most prestigious school in the Big Ten, to Michigan State, where I think just about anybody can get in. And then who's the one I'm leaving out here? Kyle Whittingham at Michigan. Yeah. Obviously a very successful coach at Utah, but that was a program that regularly failed to win the big one, or maybe lost a game they shouldn't and kept them from, you know, winning championships and getting into the playoff. So how does that, again, you're talking about a program that played in the Big 12, and you didn't have to play regularly teams like Ohio State or Penn State, and you're going to have to do that now at Michigan. But I do think – here's the thing, and I don't know. Kyle Whittingham, to me, is the most interesting because I don't think Michigan made that hire. I think they want to win, don't get me wrong. But I think they thought, who would be a solid coach for us and just, for the love of God, don't get in trouble? And I think Kyle Whittingham is that. So I think regardless of what his record is, I think that they made that hire for three years. If he has great success, then fantastic. They hit a home run. If he didn't, but he keeps their nose clean and keeps them out of the negative news for a couple of years, then that was a big victory for them as well.
Yes. And I think the other part, what's interesting with the hires of Whittingham, Pat Fitzgerald, and Matt Campbell, is they all have resumes with a Power Four team. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's not just Michigan, but those other schools want to win immediately, don't want to go to a coach that has to grow into the job. You know, yep. They already come in ready. But each one has a few unique things. As you mentioned, you know, Pat Fitzgerald out of the game for a couple of years. Is there going to be a little bit of a shock to his system coming into this new world with the portal and NIL, which is very different than what it was just, what, 3 or 4 years ago when he was coaching?
Yeah, I think he's one of those guys. He's one of those guys that's kind of Dabo Sweeney-ish. Like, he is sarcastic. He hates kind of the current environment of everything. And it's going to be interesting to see how he – but I think he has – like, I think his kids are playing college football. So he should have a pretty good understanding of as to how this all works. Maybe that time away from the game helped him. I don't know. But, like, clearly he was not doing his best work at the end of his run at Minnesota, at Northwestern. So I don't know. That's another one that I'm very curious to see, because I feel like that can go one of two ways. And I probably would say that about just about every hire on here. But he's the one to me of this group that has the biggest potential for like grand slam type hire, or what the hell were you thinking type of hire.
Well, even as you pointed out, I looked it up, at Northwestern, 3 of his last 4 years, he won one game in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Now, that fourth year, he won the West Division, but I think that was the COVID year.
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like, so I'm wondering if the game was already beginning to pass him by. And that's my concern also with, you know, Kyle Whittingham at Michigan. Michigan fans are not going to be very tolerant of a guy who just keeps his nose clean and the program's nose clean. Michigan fans expect more than that.
Well, I agree. But I think that their administration and their staff are in a position where they have to make that hire. They've dug their grave and now they've got to stand in it. So, you know, to me, that's why they made that hire. And look, Kyle Whittingham is a good football coach. I just don't know, again, a guy who's never been in the Midwest, really, a guy who is at the end of his coaching, couldn't get Utah over the hump, and now he's supposed to get Michigan. Maybe it's a situation where if he has the access to the type of talent and the resources that Michigan has, maybe he gets them to that level. But I think that Michigan put itself in this position where you had to make a spit and polish hire. And I think Kyle Whittingham, just about as well as anybody, probably fits that description. So I don't disagree. I don't think Michigan fans are going to be happy with 8-4 every year, but if you can be Michigan and you can be in contention in November, and I'm talking from the administrative standpoint, and again, you don't get in trouble, you don't have these situations like you've had with Jim Harbaugh and Sharon Moore for 2 or 3 years, then I think that you view that as a win, as long as it doesn't, you know, careen off a roller coaster here.
I always wonder about these guys, and I don't want to put him in a retirement home yet because he happens to be 66 years old. You know who else is 66 years old, Dustin?
I'm going to guess you.
Yes. So 66 is the new 46, Dustin.
That's right. I was going to ask if you've had your insure today.
but my alarm is going off. I missed my morning meds. Okay, I haven't taken my morning meds yet. Okay, so, but I wonder when it's the hire at that age, is this kind of like for the, you know, the one last paycheck, you know? And I don't think Kyle Whittingham is that kind of guy, but if he were, he wouldn't be the first guy at that age to just kind of collect a paycheck.
Yes, I agree with you, but here's where I'll slightly disagree is I think more than maybe the paycheck, I think Kyle Whittingham would say, I'll take the Michigan job and see if I can win a national championship. I think that is more than like, I'm going to put it all on the line for the next 3 or 4 years. And if I can't do it, then I don't do it. But this gives me a chance to do it.
I think, yeah, it is a little bit of, let me see how the other half lives. Let me see what it's like to coach a top-tier team like that. Bob Chesney, just as we talked about him being like the Kurt Cignetti path to get there, one of the things, and I saw this evaluation of how you hire coaches, and one of the things that they said is a pretty strong correlation is, have you won at multiple levels, multiple places? As Kurt Cignetti famously said, look at my resume, I won everywhere.
Yeah.
Bob Chesney has that same resume. It wasn't like, oh, he just picked up a James Madison program that was already in place. He's made four collegiate stops, now smaller places than even James Madison, but he's won in all four.
Yeah, I mean, it shows that there's an understanding of what it takes to win, regardless of what the level you're at. Like, he hasn't been at any of the, like, prestigious universe. Like, he went from Holy Cross to James Madison. So he hasn't had James Madison is a solid program year in and year out. They've established that. But he hasn't, you know, he hasn't been to some of these other power conference programs. So this is going to be his first shot. But as we've seen, this worked for Kurt Cignetti really well. And we'll see if it works. Like, to me, UCLA is probably in the best position of all of these programs, because what did you have to lose? Like, they were in meltdown mode. So this is, to me, we don't have anything to lose. Let's throw money at this guy who's been successful everywhere. And I don't think they're expecting a Kurt Cignetti effect, but can we put butts in seats? Can we have an exciting brand of football? And can we win, you know, seven, eight, nine games this year?
And I think the recruiting has already taken a step up a notch with Chesney there. We'll see how far it could go. All right, that leaves the one that I think our listeners would be most interested in, Matt Campbell. He's coming from Iowa State. Here's the profile. Lesser school. He did more with less talent. I did a real quick look at their recruiting over the last 6 years. 49th in the country was their very best. Most of the time they were 50-something, 60-something, or even 71st in the country. And he's no doubt coached them well above that recruiting level. Did more with less. Could he do more with more?
Yeah, I think that's the great question. How do you fit in with higher profile recruits and how do you compete against the elite of the elite teams? And this is going to be an interesting challenge for Matt Campbell. I think the schedule sets it. What's going to be really interesting is, can you take advantage of the schedule? And if you do so, how does that impact your recruiting? How does that impact the transfer portal? If he gets off to a great start in year one, it could really ease out his path moving forward. If they struggle this year, I wonder what that's going to be like for him. But this is interesting because Matt Campbell's another one like Kyle Whittingham. Like, they've had some really good teams that fell short of expectations. And they maybe didn't have the same level of talent as some of these teams that we've talked about, but they've certainly had championship caliber, Big 12 championship caliber teams that fell short of those goals. So, and we know at Penn State, like, the goal is to win a national championship. So it's going to be intriguing to see how this goes for him.
I mentioned earlier that October 10th would be a very big day for Lincoln Riley. Also a very big day for Matt Campbell. All right, Dustin, that's it for our show. Thank you so much. Thank all of you for tuning in. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform, providing exclusive recruiting intel. The first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.